We're going to talk a little bit about tax overhaul making its way, as you know, through the nation's capital and lawmakers. Big question, though, what will it mean for university endowments? And we want to talk about this with our next guest. Doug Phillips is Chief Investment Officer at the University of Rochester, joining us on the phone in Rochester, New York, along with our own Janet
lovely.
Lauren.
Rochester, New York.
It is lovely.
My hometown.
A little chilly, too. With Janet Lauren, higher education reporter at Bloomberg News. Janet's back in our Bloomberg 1130 studio in New York City. Janet, though, set the stage for us about what the House and Senate are proposing in terms of an endowment tax for universities.
So both the House and Senate have agreed in their proposals for a tax on endowment investment income of 1.4%. And again, that's on how much money the endowments make per year. And it would affect roughly 70 schools that have endowment values of about $250,000 per student. So while it affects, you know, some of the richest, including Harvard, Yale, Princeton, again, no surprise, there are some other smaller colleges that you may not have heard of that are quite wealthy in that very small threshold that they have $250,000 per student of endowment.
And it's tomorrow, not just
and well, tomorrow sorry, we may hear yeah. from the it may advance if the Senate votes.
Well, I want to get Doug Phillips in, who's CIO, Chief Investment Officer at the U of R, because, you know, some of these endowments go back. It's not just, you know, someone writing a check in the last few years. Some of these endowments are of longstanding and part of the basic structure of these schools. Doug, talk to me about the history of the endowment for the University of Rochester.
Well, here we have 2,300 endowment funds, and you can think of these as if they're a mutual fund. Each one exists on their own, and a donor at some point contributed that money with a purpose. So most of those support professors or students, so they're scholarships or professorships, and they pay the way for our faculty to come here and teach, or they come, or for the students to have reduced or free education. So the donors contractually gave this money. There's a contract for every single one of those funds, and they were never envisioned as something that would be subject to tax. There's also a requirement in all states, but New York State has a particularly carefully constructed requirement that we balance these funds for the needs of the future generation as well as the current generation of students. And there's been lots of studies. I've been doing this for 35 years, and the studies, all the studies point to spending about 5% per year of the funds as creating an equilibrium between what's coming down the road in terms of future spending and what's needed today. So the point I want to make too is that most of this money that's come to these universities and colleges, including Rochester, has happened after the end of World War II. So we had a large gift from George Eastman before the end of the war, but in the ensuing 72 years, we've had universities across the country have had millions of these types of gifts, and I don't understand what the donors of these monies will do if they know their gifts won't be able to support the students and the faculty to the degree that they had intended. So we have an unprecedented intrusion really into charitable activities by government, and we've always disclosed spending. I think I sent along a report from the General Accounting Office from 2012 mm-hmm. when they investigated at Chuck Grassley from Iowa. Senator Grassley wanted us to disclose more, and it was all disclosed to the GAO, and they found nothing improper about these spending practices. So it's quite confusing why this has happened, and this is a very good thing. We have the best system of higher education in the world. Just the past 10 years, we have across the United States, enrollment in colleges and universities gone up, headcount has gone up 31%. We have a massive demand for our education, and it's deeper, it's broader, it's more affordable than it's ever been. But there seems to be this confusion, and our lobbyists and others have tried to straighten out mm-hmm. the government understanding of it, but it hasn't really worked. So.
Janet, come on in on this, because this is certainly, you know, a world that you spend a lot of time reporting on here at Bloomberg.
So this is we understand could be millions of dollars per year for some colleges. It's going to be dependent on their investment income. And this year, where many schools had double-digit numbers, the tax would presumably be more than, say, last year, where it was a negative return. Doug, could you also talk a little bit about how the New York State Attorney General might fit in here, given that many state attorney generals have charities bureaus and oversee charitable spending? Could you envision a legal fight
here,
potentially?
Yeah. New York has something called NPMIFA, New York Prudent Management of Institutional Funds Act, and it's governed by the Charities Bureau of the Attorney General's Office, and it describes in great detail the role that trustees have to, and boards have to take in overseeing these endowment funds and how much is appropriated each year. It doesn't have a provision for paying tax, and we'll have to get an interpretation. I don't know if it comes from the Attorney General or lawyers, but somehow we have to know what guidance we can receive about how to generate the money for the tax, because the tax will either reduce the amount of money we can spend on scholarships or the amount we can pay the professors, or we will have to go into the accumulated funds that are for the future generation. So somebody has to pay it, and we'll need some guidance on that if this legislation passes the Senate.
What are you doing to keep that from happening or try to educate the Senate on that?
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, the professional organizations representing colleges and universities have presented all the facts. We've had many presidents of universities, including our own, that spoke out about this and have gone to Washington to meet with Congress and senators. And what is happening here is this is a very averse act that just increases the cost of higher education rather than decreasing it. So unfortunately, this message hasn't gotten through, and it's one of the reasons I'm happy to chat with you today. But it seems like it might be.
I thought it was because you liked us.
Of course,
well,
you
actually,
liked us.
I went to Fairport High School. Nothing.
I love coming on Bloomberg. You guys are great. You listen
Doug
well.
Phillips.
This is the sixth time.
Doug, we appreciate it. Doug's the CIO at the University of Rochester in the great city of Rochester, New York, and Janet Lauren in the great city of New York, New York, our higher education reporter for Bloomberg News.